I love the violence. Oh, it's amazing. And then suddenly there's a striking clang of what sounded like some horror-hammered hell's bell struck, and everything in the room just stopped. Like, I mean, it just, like, stopped, like, proper just stopped everything moving. It was like, I can only imagine it was like magic. It was magic, was it not? God, I'm stupid sometimes. It was magic. The scene was as if paused in a movie. You've got the idea. All the bar's creatures were frozen, as was I in mid-motion. Some things travelled through the air, you know, just like flying, and others lay still on the floor, especially the dead things. A thrown mug had paused halfway through its journey in the sky. It hung before me, just within my hand's reach. Its partially spilt contents floated next to it, and I could smell rough mead. That's strange, isn't it? Because that means that some of the particles from the mead, because that's how we smell things, must have been able to travel to... Or maybe I just imagine. Anyway, sorry. A clever bit to this magic trick was that I could not physically move any muscles at all, but I could move my eyes. Well, I suppose they've got muscles, you know, so I could move those muscles, but I couldn't move any other muscles. Yeah. It was an excellent touch to add to the magic, as I was an inch away from putting my hand through some little furry knobhead's head. God, it was frustrating. I tried to move with every ounce of my strength, but it was no good. I was stuck, as was everyone else in the room. I was so close to putting out the Dogman Thing's lights, it fucking hurt. A purple-robed figure coalesced in a space to my left with an audible burst of light. Shut up. I know you can't get an audible burst of light, but we're talking magical shit, right? So anything can be acceptable, or some stuff like that. The purple glowy robe was a shadow wrapped in a like neon purple. Well, it was a glowy purple robe. It lifted its shrouded arms above its head and turned in like a weird circle, looking around the room and seeming to consider everything it saw. Well, I mean, the hood considered everything. I couldn't see its face, because... Anyway. As it turned in its 1980s neon reminder of hell-like eye-bleeding colours, I could see the word Bosworth was printed in neon pink, flashing letters across its back. This guy, thing, was either a showman or shopped at the same place as Elton John did. Maybe, perhaps both, who knew? It paused, and even though I couldn't see a face, I could definitely see that the thing was thinking and sort of considering what to do. This was the Bosworth that the professor had mentioned previously. Apparently, he knew his monks or something. For some reason, I found the knowledge of this thing knowing the traditional monks a bit distasteful due to the colour of its robes. Should it not be in, like, Scottish tweeds? I mean, I may be stereotyping, but it didn't look like it should be an expert in malts. Maybe, I don't know, an expert in slutty named cocktails. Things like, I don't know, the salty semen. Semen with an A in it. With an A in it. You made that joke yourself. Don't try and blame me for the way your mind works. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, hermaphrodites, asexuals and others. That is the karaoke and the brawl part of the evening over. I think it was waiting for maybe a cheer or a round of applause, but sadly we were all a little stuck. Oh, he continued as he realised the audience could not interact. I always forget that you are somewhat indisposed at this point, it said. We'd like to finish the brawl by 8:88 a.m. with a complimentary drink or two at the bar, which will be attended for you by the wonderful Fliss and her crew. He waved a robe-covered arm to the bar, where the beautiful people nodded at the mention. As you know, the brawl is officially over, and more violence in my establishment will not be accepted. If you want to continue anything, please do so on your own planes of existence. Thank you. Also, please remember that the staff are not here to accept any abuse from you patrons. Well, that's a lie. They'll accept it, but then they'll drink your brains out of your respective ears as a result. And that is with the full backing of the management, I add. Although, looking around some of you here, they would go hungry to say the least. He smiled at a joke often said and probably never funny at this point. My perambulating eyes, that's a good word, isn't it? Fell on Fliss, the beautiful woman at the bar. She briefly flashed into a grotesque, giant, insect-like creature with spiky mouth parts that looked as though they were well-designed for the job of drinking your brain through any orifice. It was a somewhat disquieting momentary vision, and even I thought that I'd be giving a very hefty tip at the end of this night of revelry. After disseminating its information, the robe seemed to throb in colour, grow in stature, and start to build vocally in volume. It began to chant some litany to the crowd. Then quickly bringing its hands down, a flash left the end of the arm's robes and spread through the silent room with a strange smell of Parma violence. If you don't know what those are, they're a kind of weird sweet in America candy that kids eat in Britain that tastes like, well, it tastes like you're eating cheap perfume, but weirdly they're nice. I am Bosworth Purple Flasher, Chief Robe Meister of the Violet and Violent Throbbing Dawn. This is my reality and I control it. As the god of this site and most fashionable and voluminous robe winner voted 3 years running by Hags and Horrors magazine, I call upon the dead to rise! He lifted his purple arms to the ceiling, and those forms on the floor that seemed flat and dead slowly got to their feet, and tentacles and other supporting items slowly healing to become whole and alive. All injuries are fixed. All hurts are repaired. All dopamine levels and serotonin levels are significantly increased, if you know what I mean, it yelled. Only cryptocurrency is available at the bar. We're all crypto ears, are we not? It laughed again. It's, well, like, shit joke. No more tonight will any hurts be caused. No threats will be issued. Only laughter and joy will ensue. And that bloody includes you, Keith, he said, pointing and laughing at the confused-looking Minotaur I destroyed earlier as its wandering eyes checked its fingers, seemingly pleased with its repairs. Well, judging from what I could take from that bovine stare. All items here will be repaired and fixed. Each glass, each chair will become whole and new again. He clicked some fingers, I presume, deep in his sleeves. The mug before me scooped up the spilt liquid slowly and flew and settled on a table that had rebuilt itself and dragged back its lost benches. Everything looked brand kind of new after a moment or two, or as new as this stuff in here could look. I laughed as I sent the Repario spell from Harry Potter to my werewolf's mind, who knew that the Repario spell was a real thing. Now, we're all free for the rest of the night, shouted the purple robe before the bar denizens started moving again, laughing and clapping to the now bowing robe before them. Cheers and much jocularity were shared as claps on the backs were shared and they were shared between things that had, just recently been digging the eyes out of each other's heads with thumbs. Bizarre.
I needed that,
said the professor from my left shoulder. He was going through some kind of weird calisthenics routine. He was like bending and stretching this way and that. For some reason, it reminded me of a 1950s newsreel I'd seen of exercising kids back then.
Cooling down after these things is very important once you get to my age, you know. You need to stay limber and all that, old chap,
he said as he noticed my confusion at his movements.
Join me?
He asked. I shook my head in a no, and he smiled. What was that? What the fuck was all that about? I asked him, obviously showing a confused face. Even Fenn was looking a bit weirded out about what had just happened.
Sorry, old chap, I didn't give you the full timetable for this place this evening, did I? Bosworth runs a tight ship. We start at 6:66 a.m, with cocktails, of course, at 7:77 a.m. Yes, before you ask, I don't know how we get to 6:66 or 7:77. But here we do. Just look at your watch if you don't believe me.
He nodded towards my wrist. I looked at the beautiful Seamaster that was there, but now it kind of hurt my brain. There was too many dials, too many numbers, too many hands, and just too many things that sort of formed the weird bubble in my brain of, what the fuck? Watches don't work like that watch to work at that moment.
Too much time of a different kind here.
He continued patting me.
I could explain it to you, but firstly, I don't want to. And secondly, you don't want me to either. Just accept it. At 7:77 a.m. the karaoke starts. Then at 8:88 a.m. the brawl kicks off. It's bloody marvellous fun. And it doesn't stain my cynical record with him upstairs either for some reason. Probably because no one dies or something like that.
His mind kind of wandered off as he paused as though trying to consider why this was.
Then, Bozzy does the hubba-bubba magic thing and all is good.
His smile was genuine and plain. He really enjoyed this.
Somewhat of a unique selling point, what? To this place, I mean. Don't you think?
He continued. It was a question, but I don't think he meant for me to answer it as he continued speaking, really. I mean, is it called rhetorical or something? I don't know. Maybe you could answer that question. He then whispered behind his hand.
I also have to say that it's good for getting rid of those little niggles you build up as well. Between you and me, I've got a bit of a dicky back. I hate to admit it. But Bosworth fixes that up a treat with that spell of his. I've been to several specialists on Harley Street who couldn't touch it. But Izzy Wizzy, let's get busy from Bosworth and a few months of pain-free function saves me a bloody arm and a leg.
He told me as he smiled and rocked his hips back and forth, showing the movement that he now had in his lower back.
Yes, he fixes everything in an undeniably wonderful manner. But I have to admit, his ability to fix the drinks is not the best.
He pointed to the now whole bottle of Glenturret on the bar and with genuine sadness, he just said,
"This, for instance, will never be the same, I'm sorry to say."
He said, shaking his head mournfully and drawing the sign of the cross over his chest. A bellow distracted me from across the way and the Minotaur I now knew as Keith came storming towards me, looking all angry and bullish. The professor just stepped back and leant back on the bar as though nothing was happening. I was getting ready to fight as the thing roared and snorted, steaming its way through the crowd. But for some reason, I didn't retaliate first in this case. I was waiting to see what would happen as everything else in the room behaved as though, well, nothing was out of place. Was this now normal behaviour for the mighty Keith the Minotaur? In the next moment, the Minotaur just grabbed me in a bone-crunching hug. I barked as it winded me with the force of its unwarranted cuddle.
"Ah, Keith!"
the professor said to the bull.
"How goes it? Is the herd of honey and calves okay?"
The bull nodded and shook its head, speaking some language I didn't know. The professor laughed in return at his response and shook his head.
"You have what, 25 heifers now? I don't know how you do it, my friend. You must be exhausted. Getting on these days a bit, you know. Actually, you were definitely off your normal dazzlingly violent game on the dance floor tonight. Beaten by an untransformed werewolf, no less. What would you say if he knew?"
They both laughed at this and the Minotaur shook its head in acknowledgement. It nodded towards me, who had a somewhat Well, me, I mean, I had a somewhat glazed look on my face at this bizarre conversation that was happening. I know it was weird enough with the creatures involved and the magic and shit, but it now seemed that these guys knew each other really well on top of things, and that the death and destruction of the last half hour was just simply a normal kind of thing.
Oh, of course, I'm sorry. Allow me to introduce you. This is Will. He is a werewolf,
Simon said, pointing to me.
Yes, he's one hell of a fighter, too. A bit cruel, but then we all have our kinks, don't we, huh?
The beast bellowed a sigh, shook my hand, and just then simply wandered back off into the crowd.
Used to be a monster to Zeus in a labyrinth no one went to. We rescued him a couple of decades ago now. It was the last of his kind, actually. Now they're becoming a little too common to hide. Too much bloody testosterone for their own good, that lot, if you ask me.
Fenn stood next to me laughing at all that had happened. The confusion I pervaded always made him happy, so he was in his absolute element.
That was a great fight to watch, gentlemen. You did some right good fighting, said Fenn.
Why, thank you,
nodded the professor.
Let's get a little more of the libations going, shall we?
He continued.
I'm afraid you may have to go and chat with Lucifer over there, Will,
said the professor, his arm pointed to the unholy, glamorous woman across the bar.
Give her my best. It's not that I don't want to speak to her. It's just that it always makes life more complicated, and that's something I can do without at this juncture. Okay? Good luck.
He gave me a mock salute and turned to the bar stewards.
Go on. Off you pop.
I smiled as I caught the eye of the beautiful woman across the room. Yeah, she was there. Yeah, she was here. Of course she was. She was the Lucifer who was looking on like a big looker at looking at what had happened. I left her eye contact momentarily to look for the horrible vampire woman. She was nowhere to be seen. She wasn't present anymore, or at least I couldn't sense her in this crowd, and even in this riot of sensations, I could have been able to pick her out of anywhere. Then another memory struck me. Sally! My little Sally! My little Sally? Why did I call her that? My Sally? That's fucking odd, I don't own her. Sally O'Neill was here. Oh, where is she? Oh, God, my little Sally. She'd been here too. She'd battered that thing, that kobold or whatever it was. I now felt something in me tummy, a bit distressed, and I couldn't understand why. I wanted to find her desperately. What was it about that woman? She made me feel stuff here. Well, you can't see where I'm pointing, can you? But here in my heart. Shit! I hate this emotional stuff. It hurts much more than the usual physical pain stuff, right? A hand fell in mine from beside me, and I turned slowly, expecting to see her. Oh, not that smile. I was expecting shit, it was the devil. My face went from a broad smile of oh, no, I can't feel that. I felt hope at seeing Sally to that of a dropped souffle of disappointment at not seeing Sally. I could see that I'd actually hurt the devil, you know, because she was the recipient of this response as my face fell.
They've both gone,
she said, with an element of sadness in her voice. I could see some concern in her eyes.
They left straight after the little fight thing that you were involved in. They seemed pretty friendly as they went.
She had a glass tumbling around full of a thick blue liquid, her blood-red lips parted, and she seductively took the black straw that was in it between them. This would have normally been an all-consuming thing, but my concern for Sally completely overruled the devil's usual seduction. Lucifer drew up some of the blue drink, swallowing it with a gulp, and she nodded at the door.
They went off together, but they were talking about you.
I stared at the door and considered what to do. Should I go chase them down? What should I? What would you suggest I do? I asked her. There was no response. I turned towards her, looking, you know, a little angrily to the spot that had been Satan moments ago. I was now holding the hand of some scaly lizard-type thing that was looking at me through chameleon eyes with its tongue lolled from its mouth. I dropped the hand, smiled at the thing, made my apologies and wandered off towards the professor, who was talking in an animated way to the bar staff person creature insect thing that I now recognised as being Fliss. In my mind, I was thinking, well, if she decided to go, I should let her. Should I not? It was her choice. Fern, who was listening to this thought as he listened to everything, was becoming concerned. Was I showing empathy? This really wasn't good. The night was now early, late, with the time here, who the fuck knew? It'd been a long one, let's put it that way. We'd been escorted over to the RIP, really important personifications, get it? Part of the bar. I know it's usually the VIP section, but we're in a fairy world. An RIP sounds much more like a fairy kind of horror thing, doesn't it? Yeah? Does it not? RIP? Rest in peace? No. God, you know, you try. You sit here, and you bloody try. And what do you get? I don't know. It was a few booths, and they had a huge ogre thing literally overseeing them because he was, well, so huge. And they had like a little red rope thing blocking them off so that the not normal folk, fuck, I hurt my head, who were not worthy couldn't enter. One booth was taken by Bosworth's purple glowing robe and some things around him ranging in all sizes and shapes and colours and... Yeah, you can just get it, can't you? It was weird. The surface of the table was coated in the night's detritus, spilled beer, cups, glasses, bottles and strangely sparkly white streaks. Don't know what that was. Oddly, the booth seemed surrounded by flitting little lights floating in the air. But only on closer inspection did I realise that they were actual little fairies flying around and offering fairy, let's call it dust for the sake of our audience. Ah, Simon, said the raw Bosworth as he got to his feet to greet the professor with a hearty handshake. Oh, and you must be well. We've heard so much about you over the past few years, he said, offering me the same greeting as the professor. Please, sit. Join us. We're all dying to hear about all your life from the werewolf's mouth, as it were. We sat comfortably amongst the other things that sort of weirdly snuggled and cuddled in around us. The things genuinely seemed fascinated to hear me stories, and unusually for me, I fell for it. Well, I fell for it's probably wrong. I mean, I enjoyed the fact that someone wanted to know about me, and normally I wouldn't share just because that's something I'd learnt not to do. But I figured that these others could understand and really get a werewolf. Humans don't really get us, you see. All thoughts of wee Sally were gone. She'd left. The best for our guests, Bosworth barked at a waiter nearby who shuffled off to the bar to get whatever the best was. I looked at Simon, who gave me a very unprofessor-like thumbs up as he rubbed his palms. I sensed that he was excited about getting Bosworth's best. He lifted a finger to one of the flittering fairy folk and it floated over to his extended finger where it sat for a moment before lifting off once more and leaving a deposit, which Simon then deposited in a nostril with a satisfied sniff. So, tell me why you two are compadres and why you're here at my humble establishment this evening, Bosworth asked with his deep voice from his cowl. To be honest, I was a little bit nervous. I couldn't see the creature within, and it seemed to read this. He either read my mind or read my body language or something. Oh, excuse me. I should really introduce myself first. I am Bosworth, Purple Flasher, Chief Robe Meister of the Violet and Violent Throbbing Dawn. I am a djinn, a genie, a minor god. This is my establishment and my little world that I control. Hands now moved clear of the sleeves of the robe. They were actually fucking neon purple in colour themselves. Yeah, the skin emitted lights. The things around me noticed my discomfort and a couple laughed lightly at it. Stop it, admonished the djinn. I am new to him here. He removed his hood and introduced a slightly too large purple head on a purple body. I couldn't
you know, sort of stereotype his looks based on race or form. I couldn't, but he was just really, like, purple and glowy. He could see I was a little taken aback, but didn't seem hurt or disappointed that I was. "Welcome to me world, Phaeton, and the Phaeton Arms, the famous Phaeton Arms. Now, Will, young Will, me lad, we want your stories." All the drinkers either sat back or sat forward in their respective seats to get comfy. Eventually, all eyes, and there were some weird fucking eyes there, and there was an odd number of them too, which was odd, stared at me in anticipation. It was like story time at nursery school. It was about 5 hours later. Sorry. Simon and I had been monologuing for a few hours and stuff, and drinks just kept coming and stuff, and people liked what I was saying and stuff. God, I was pissed. The world was doing that. Do you know that spinny things when you close your eyes and stuff, and stuff wanted out my belly and stuff, but I was managing to keep it together because I'm a werewolf, you know. Our audience were like worshipping us and stuff, and I told them stuff that was pretty horrendous and stuff, but they loved it and stuff. Simon had said some stories that topped mine when it came to like mass murdering and stuff. He knew his stuff. He was an utter bastard in the past and stuff. He was like proper evil and stuff, honest. I liked him loads. After a while, the bar seemed empty a bit, apart from RIP area at the bar. Staff joined us. Many of them seemed to like sort of wrap themselves around a thoroughly happy Simon. He had both arms full of bodies. Sorry. And one sat on his lap as he pontificated about stuff. He liked a good pontificate. Excuse me a minute. He was good at it. I enjoyed his pontificating. I had my own little team of worshippers too. I'd never been this drunk, but the fairy dust that I'd never tried before seemed to keep me going somehow. It was like that cocaine, but nicer. It was good stuff, and was that stuff. The little fairies would light a light on your finger and leave a little pile of sparkly, shiny powder stuff, which you then snorted. Made you want to fly and stuff. I didn't want to know where it came from as I watched one of the beautiful, tiny winged female fairies squat and grimace with effort as she deposited more stuff on me finger. Eventually, there was no more time. I don't remember much at this point, but being taken somewhere else by a posse of pretty people. I was taken into a large bedroom in a posh type hotel called the Phaeton Hotel. I found that imaginative. And then, well, somehow we did all stuff. It was incredible. Orgies, group sex is one of my favourite things, and this was an orgy as one of those of gigantic proportions. Bodies writhed and became one, and pleasure and lust was satisfied as all enjoyed the time together. Shit, I really wish I could remember more of it. But happily, it would be coming back in flashbacks over the next few years. I then woke up. If you've listened to episode 142, you know about my morning's ablutions. They were explained there. The shower, the preparation for the day, the recovery from the hangover, which lucky for me was only a few seconds long, another benefit of being a werewolf. I come back through to the main bedroom, leaving the girl on the toilet in the bathroom, when a knock came at the door. I wandered over. I was kind of hoping that it was breakfast. It was great. I was kicking my way through the snow-like, well, it was like a snow-like covering of clothing that was on the carpet. I remembered more of the incredible night. memories of some of those items being removed, and what was revealed as their loss was given. It was great. I adjusted my towel slightly and peered through the peephole as I got to the door. No one was visible. Paranoia. So I carefully opened the door to, well, nothing. Weird. I yawned and scratched my towel-dried head as I looked for someone up and down the corridor. There wasn't anyone, no footsteps, no smell, really, of anybody. Strange. Eventually I looked down at the package on the floor. It was wrapped in plain brown paper with a red ribbon. A lipstick kiss was on the paper next to the bowl. I leant and lifted. It was pretty heavy and smelled of a really kind of rich perfume. I turned and closed the door with a kick, wandering back through the room, undoing the ribbon and placing the box on a handy table to unwrap it. I removed the paper to find just a cardboard box. I lifted the lid to see what was inside, humming a happy little satiated tune. There was, it's a bit odd, there's a little piece of grey fur. Weird. Oh no, there's like three pieces of grey fur. Like little placemats. Underneath the fur were, oh, they were Malcolm's crumpled aviator glasses. You might remember that Malcolm was my servant in the past. He'd been snatched by the vampires from my home. They were his glasses, definitely. They smelt of him. I couldn't forget those crumpled mess. What the fuck was this about? What the... Then again, I lifted one of the furry items. It kind of flopped open into... It was a skin. It was actually a skin. It wasn't just fur. It was a tiny little wolf pelt. It was quite cute. My brain wasn't computing. How bizarre was that? What did that mean? Why had someone sent me these? I mean, it was cute. Was it a threat? I mean, the aviators? I don't know. And three of them. Three of the little pelts. I sort of laughed. I mean, I like Malcolm, but do you know what? Shit happens, and he wasn't the nicest of people. Then the world came into a horrific focus. No. No, they couldn't have been. They couldn't, no, they wouldn't have, no. These were cured little pelts, tiny little cured wolf pelts. Sally had been pregnant. No, she was pregnant. She told me so. These were little... No, they didn't. They fucking didn't. I collapsed to my knees and screamed into the night. True terror had hit my heart for the first time. This was pain. This was hurt. No!